Okay, hello. My name is Marco Dacos. I'm a software engineer at Google. I was going to give this presentation with Brandon Lum. Unfortunately, he fell sick. We had originally planned for, Brandon loves SBOM so much that he really wanted to give the talk. So he did a recording of the first part, but we didn't check. We didn't realize that that's not supported here at Fossum. So I'm just going to give the whole thing. So bear with me for the first part. Let's begin. Today we're going to talk about Google's journey with SBOMs. We'll start out with how we implemented various aspects of this, and then some lessons learned through this process. We will go through the SBOM lifecycle of generation, storage, retrieval, and then various applications. And so before we start off with this lifecycle, to give some context on our initial motivation to dive deep into SBOMs was a mix of responding to EO 14028 and security and license use cases as well. Before we get into that lifecycle, let's talk about some design principles that we developed. The first question we asked is, what are we looking for in SBOMs? We rallied around two properties. First, accuracy and trustworthiness. Is the dependency information in the SBOM correct? And then trustworthiness. Can we trust this SBOM and use it for important security and compliance decisions? Based on these properties, we developed a series of best practices that we'll go through in this talk. There's a link here as well to a document that goes through these design principles that we recently made public. So feel free to check that out. Another question clearly that we ran into was SPDX or CycloneDX or both. But more generically, the question is, how opinionated do we want to be throughout this process? The scope for us was very large. It spanned organizations, different products, different tech stacks. There were a lot of moving pieces. As a result, we decided that less is more, that for all of the moving pieces to come together in a better way, being more opinionated would be helpful. So we decided to only use one SBOM standard. Based on the experience we had at the time, we went with SPDX. So let's get into SBOM generation and how we approach to this. The question that we faced here is when and where to generate SBOMs. We can do it at the source phase, during the build, or analysis after the fact, after the artifact has been generated. On one hand, if we look at the source, if we generate SBOMs at the source, we found that things like tests and plugin dependencies would end up in the SBOM. We found that there is perhaps ambiguous dependency resolution. And on the other side, for analysis SBOMs, builds are lossy. There could be missing context. In 2022, we did some work and showed that if we, for example, import a binary into a container image, as we mentioned, builds are lossy, so that information won't, the dependencies of that binary won't show up in the SBOM. This is a Goldilocks situation. At the source, SBOMs are inaccurate, and in the analysis of the artifact stage, they can be incomplete. We found that the best best approach is to meet in the middle at the build time, where there is a good trade-off between accuracy and completeness. We found that to really know what goes into the artifact that's being produced, the builder and the build process knows best. So we recommended that only the builders can generate SBOMs. But this is, again, also a nuanced question, because during the build time, there can be an SBOM generated by the build tooling itself, or an SBOM generated by an SCA tool. We recommended that wherever possible, the build tool should generate the SBOM. And in some cases, this lists some cases where we do that. For Android, we created a Gradle plugin that generates an SPDX SBOM during the build. And we have a similar approach for Google 3, which is our monorepo. But outside of that, we use SCA tools such as Sift and OSV Scalibur to generate the SBOM during the build process. So now we are faced with SBOM storage. We have the SBOMs, so let's just put them into a database and be done. Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And one of the important questions here was to be able to use SBOMs for important security and compliance decisions, to be able to give them to the government, for example, how can we create an SBOM database that we can trust? So for this, we developed a system called Silo, the Supply Chain Integrity Log. Contrary to its name, it's supposed to break up metadata silos. For those familiar with Guac, it serves a similar purpose. Guac is a project in the OpenSSF. It serves a similar purpose, and it's under the same team, or it's worked on by members of Silo as well. So Silo, for some context, collects metadata from software supply chain events that occur in Google. When builders produce artifacts, they produce build provenance, they sign it, and then they send it over to Silo. And then Silo can verify the signature, can verify that it was produced by a trusted builder, and then can ingest it, store it, and use it and make that information usable. For SBOMs, we took a similar approach. We used an inToto predicate type called the reference attestation, which we have now upstreamed to the attestation repository that associates an SBOM, or in this case, SBOMs with a software artifact. And so here, when builders produce SBOMs, they generate and sign an inToto attestation and send it over to Silo. And Silo verifies this to ensure the integrity of the SBOM. And this also supports only accepting SBOMs from trusted builders. So now, in theory, we have a table mapping artifacts to SBOMs. And retrieval should be easy. But famous last words. So what we want is to have a simple input-output of looking up an SBOM by an artifact, such as a URI or a digest. But what we got was nothing when we did this operation. Why is that? So the context is that we're working in a supply chain. It's a graph, and it has to be reasoned about as such. When we search for the SBOM of gcr.io/abcd, we didn't get anything because no SBOM was produced for that artifact, because that last stage, when that artifact was produced, was, say, a promotion process. And that's not a build. So there was no SBOM generated there. What we can do is go back in the graph. We can look one level lower. And here, in this case, we did not find an SBOM. And then we go even further back, and turns out that this artifact in the staging is a multi-arc image that was assembled from different container images itself, and here we found SBOMs. Great. But we can go even further back, all the way back through the chain, to collect all the SBOMs that were in some way associated in the production of this final artifact. So now, when we look up for the SBOMs of an artifact, we get a collection of SBOMs. Awesome. Here are some edge cases that we ran into throughout this process. Going back a second, what we did was generate a implement a transitive search through the software supply chain graph whenever looking for SBOMs to collect all of these. And here's some edge cases that we ran into through this process. I won't go into all of them here, but in general, the practice here, the principle here is that to get good quality SBOMs that are accurate and complete, we try to compose them to arrive at completeness. So we've left out a little bit of detail here. Where does this graph come from? This is an idealized state, or is it real? So let's go back to the build, what we mentioned earlier. That when a builder produces an artifact, it creates a build provenance, not only describing how the build was conducted, but also the dependencies and the materials that went into the build. So this provenance can be used to construct the graph. It can be used to glue together these lost pieces of SBOMs, creating more complete SBOMs by composing them together. And this is a blog post, partly by Brandon, that goes into this in more detail about how Salsa and SBOMs work together. Another challenge we ran into here is that often requests for SBOMs aren't at the artifact granularity. Somebody will ask for SBOMs for a product, say PixelOS. And translating this to something that can be interpreted with the mechanisms that we developed is challenging. Maintaining software inventory is hard. And in these cases, we relied on the expertise of product teams. This is an example of why, in part, this is challenging, because different products can have can be composed of artifacts in different in varied ways. Okay, so we've responded to the EO, but compliance isn't fun, so let's talk about some other things that we've done with SBOMs. SBOM blobs are cool, but what they contain is even better. We use them to develop a dependency inventory across the organization. This involved parsing and storing the SBOM data at scale. For now, we only store flat lists of dependencies that are in the SBOMs. We found that the graph structure that can be encoded in an SBOM, the relationships, was useful, but that it wasn't mature enough to really be depended on. And developing such a dependency inventory with SBOMs in a large software producing machine like Google is difficult, where it spanned different products, tech stacks, different CI/CD flows, different SBOM generators. But there are some properties of SBOMs that really helped this succeed. This included the fact that SBOMs are a common format across ecosystems. This enabled us to reason about otherwise siloed systems through a single pane of glass. And another thing that really helped here was that SBOMs are flexible, both in the generation and in the concepts of them. We did, as we talked about, put forth recommendations on how they should be produced in Google. But within that, each ecosystem could choose to generate SBOMs in a way that produced the best SBOMs for them. But this flexibility also led to some challenges that we'll talk about in a bit. So we have this dependency inventory. We can combine it with things like threat intelligence and organizational metadata using systems like Silo and Guok, and use that for various use cases such as incident response, measuring risk from upstream open source dependencies, and also for general business and housekeeping purposes. This inventory enables fast identification of where packages are used. This is critical for incident response. I think this is like a log4shell or XE type capability. A quote from a product team is that they were able to figure out that they weren't affected by an incident within 10 minutes using SBOMs. What's shown on the screen here is a sample dashboard that can search across this inventory. As you can see, the searching for a single dependency searches through various, like very very siloed systems, and that's part of the value that the SBOMs provide. This slide also calls out the importance of point of contact information or attribution of artifacts to of SBOMs to artifacts and artifacts to products and to teams. This organizational metadata is important because otherwise the actionability of this inventory is limited, and it creates toil when responding to incidents. Five minutes left. It's not until 10:30.
Yeah, with all the questions.
Oh, the questions. Okay. Yes. Okay. So, another thing, another use case that we applied it to is to measure the risk from our dependency usage. This graph shows a subset of the fleet, the dependencies of a subset of the fleet mapped to their OpenSSF scorecard scores. And this identifies a danger zone here. But this really highlights the need for additional metadata such as criticality and attribution to make this more actionable. So I will now run through some lessons that we learned through this process of operationalizing a dependency inventory using SBOMs. As you might have noticed, we decided to use Perls for the identification scheme for this inventory. We decided to use Perls because they're common in SBOMs. They are other identification schemes didn't cut it, and we didn't want to develop a new one. However, we quickly noticed that many SBOMs or packages in SBOMs didn't have Perls. In these cases, we generated fake Perls with the information that was available in SBOM, but this still had limited utility. And often this happened due to things like build time generation of SBOMs from artifacts that contain third-party vendored code, where the proper identification metadata hadn't been propagated through. Other shortcomings that we ran into related to SCA tools that we used, and these are really a fundamental result of how they operate, But SCA tools attempt to read files on disk and match them to packages in a registry based only on what the file on disk says, and not and without access to the registry. Understandably, this can lead to some issues. And the problem is that the same package can have, sorry, the problem is that different packages can have the same names or very similar manifest files within or outside of the same ecosystem, and the scanner has to choose one. For example, Unity, which is a game engine, has the same package.json file as npm, and in this case, npm perls were generated for something that wasn't npm at all. Other cases include private packages. This is an example. This is shown on the screen. This is a manifest file of a private package in a repository that is not published to npm, but an npm perl was generated for it. And perl the for the by the perl spec, this this perl indicates that this package is on the registry, but in reality, it's not. So why is this important? Why do I flag this? It's because some other people, not with the best intentions, also realize this. For a lot of these packages, such as the private packages, for example, malware was submitted to the registry under that package name. The name was squatted, and then this creates a lot of toil because whenever somebody uses a project that contains one of these, say, private packages and runs a scanner on it, it will flag it as malware. In reality, it's not. This is an example of a thread of a project that contains such a package, and it receives a lot of complaints. Understandably, the maintainer didn't sympathize. So we also ran into some challenges with identifiers. I'm going to go through this section quickly because I don't have much time left. But the SCA problems that I mentioned are compounded by lack of expressivity of the identifiers that we used. In general, identification is hard. Even if we could identify that a package is private, for example, Perl doesn't support creating an identifier for it. SCA tools could extract more information, such as hashes, but how to do this isn't standardized. And how to compare packages with that, say, supplemental information isn't standardized either. I'd like to also just call out a project that I think is making a lot of progress in this space, Guac, which is Guac that we mentioned earlier. Guac is looking at a strategy of disambiguating and correlating identifiers to help solve this issue. So these issues all fall under SBOM quality. The other issues have also highlighted this, and the importance of the application, the importance of SBOMs have meant that this year we're really going to focus on SBOM quality, both on syntactic elements, but also semantics, such as completeness and accuracy. This is an example of SBOM quality that it's a lack of accuracy, but I don't think I have time to go that into here. So what now? We went from almost zero SBOMs to 4 million SBOMs a week, totaling over 200 million SBOMs. Security and compliance teams are using SBOMs to triage security and compliance issues. SBOMs are a part of the organization of the security posture of several organizations, and we've been through a few SBOM tools along the way, and we use several SBOM tools along the way. This is just a list of some things that we're going to that we're looking forward to that we're focusing on this year. And yeah, that's just on the screen. So I'm ready to take any questions if anybody has any. Yep.
Which tool do you use for recognizing vulnerabilities, for example? Is that completely different from the SBOMs?
Or
do you
So the question is if we use what do we use to detect vulnerabilities in SBOMs, and do we do that as part of, is that in scope of SBOMs or is it out of scope? Is that done separately? In this case it's out of scope.
I also have a question.
Yes.
Since you mentioned the supply chain, do you reuse parts of the SBOMs or each one results in the end SBOM that is being used as a standalone unit?
And
or does it point to intermediate SBOMs that are being...
If I understand your question correctly, we use provenance to the question is, explicitly, do we merge SBOMs together or do we compose them? We compose them with the mechanism that we mentioned.
Sorry.
Yes.
You've got a huge amount of data set, really good. How are you contributing the data you're finding upstream to make the metadata better for everybody else?
Well, good question. Yes. How are we have a big data set, how are we contributing this back to upstream to help the community? This year we're looking at generating or developing an SBOM quality library. This is something that we may be able to open source. And OSV Scalibur will be a part of the SBOM quality that we look at, and this is open source as well.
So you're not, you know.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, the co-presenter Brandon was online on the Matrix and was answering questions there.
Sorry. If you have more questions, you can ask on the Matrix.